Hey, welcome back to another exciting episode of Axe of the Journey. We have a fantasy horror film, writer-director Joshua Bailey. The film is Waltz. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, I want to start at the very beginning.
With your host, Simon Watson.
Your film is very long. I mean, usually when you watch an independent film, I would say they're about an hour 20, roughly. But you go to an hour 40, which is, I will say, very impressive.
Well, thank you. Our original cut was about 2 hours long. So my editor was actually able to, trim some of the fat and bring it down a bit. I suppose we were shooting for like 90 minutes and we hit it about 100. So yeah, it was a heck of an effort, I guess.
I want to discuss that. You only have three major actors in the film. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a couple scenes with extra people, but how did you work on your pacing? Like, this does not feel long at all. I was quite enjoying it. I mean, obviously I knew there had to come to an end at one point. I realized that, but sure. I got to say, your writing in the talk scenes, it's very quick. It feels very real most of the time. So did that help you get that length?
Yeah, I think so. There were, the torture scenes, the talk scenes that you're talking about, those were a sticking point. I actually had, and our cast will probably not like the memories being brought back up, but we had... I did those in all long takes. So, obviously, usually when you shoot a film, you do a few lines, you do a few scenes or a moment or two, and then you cut, and then you do some more, switch up the angles, whatever. For those scenes, I actually tormented our actors a little bit, and actually we did long takes. So we did, the first scene in particular, or the second scene in particular, is the longest one, the torture scene, because we have the... the dialogue and the back and forth and then the safety pin stuff and all that other fun stuff that happens there. So yeah, we shot those in very, very long takes. We snipped some of the dialogue out where the pacing was hurt a little bit by the length. But yeah, I mean, my goal as a, I've always considered myself to be a writer first and foremost. So my goal is to make my editor's job easier by doing all of that on the page before we even get to the part where we're shooting. That way, there's a little bit less work on her in post-production. And so I try to basically trim the fat as I'm doing the screenplay so that we don't have a lot of stuff to actually cut out. So yeah, that's kind of how we ended up with what I, and I'm thrilled that you found it to be well-paced. The talking scenes, they make me a little nervous because those scenes can be very, very boring and uninteresting with the wrong people or with the wrong dialogue. So I'm glad that it landed and that it worked for you. That's good to know.
Let's go back to that. I want to thank you for not editing those scenes. I find, as somebody myself who watches a ton of indie film, constant edits really upset me for the most part. So I'm going to give your editor full credit and yourself. I like those long scenes. I like allowing people to develop their voice, I guess, and letting the scene build on its own. So if you did minor edits in there, I do not see them. I think it all worked for me very well.
Great. Yeah. I think that a lot of that credit too goes to, I mean, we did have a very experienced cast, even though, I mean, I will say without spoiling who the Hatter is, that particular actor was pretty green. They were actually still in college. They were attending Point Park University when we shot this. So they had, I think, one more year of school left after the film was done. And you wouldn't tell. I mean, they were just fantastic. And Hannah, our lead role who played Alice, she is possibly the only true working actor that I've had the opportunity to work with in my kind of short film career. She is 100%. That is all she does. She doesn't have a side job or a day job like most everybody else in the cast and crew. This is it. Acting is her life. She was in a lot of plays and films in England where she's from. She's from near Manchester, England. She has toured with Pride and Prejudice through China. and through, you know, Asia. So she is one heck of an actress, and we were very lucky to that our paths intersected. She's not in Pittsburgh anymore. So we were lucky to get her while she was here, and you know, that she really knocked it out of the park, in my opinion. Of course, every director is going to say, "Oh, my cast is the best," but I mean, I am super proud of what those guys did. It was a great effort.
Did you always write the film with only three people involved? I mean, you must have a very limited budget, but I think you get a lot out of it.
Yeah, I did. It was always meant to be a very small cast. I mean, at the indie level, the things that you can control with cost, you can control the size of your cast, and you can control how many locations you have. And so that was something that I set out to do on purpose. With Waltz, we had done in 2016, we did a 25-minute version of Waltz. It was a not nearly as good of a script, in my opinion, but you know, it was just a short. There were even fewer locations, and again, it was just three main actors. And yeah, I definitely did that on purpose and tried to limit so that the money that we did have could go a little further. And we did. We had, I mean, it was a micro budget. I mean, it seems like a lot of money, but I think we spent maybe about like 20, 21,000 on Waltz altogether. And a majority of that went towards the cast and the crew, our special effects guys, more gore effects, Jason Proakis, based out of Center Township here. Those guys were awesome, and you know, it was definitely worth every penny we spent on them.
Okay, I want to start right the first shot when she's waking up off the pillow. I don't know if it was a set design issue, but you have animal prints. I did notice an animal pillow and an animal thing, but it never came back. So was that just there? Or was that supposed to be for the end? Was I supposed to assume the animal at the end? Is that foreshadowing maybe? Or I could be reading
No,
into it.
they were just the bed sheets that we happened to grab on the way out the door. A lot of that stuff was stuff that came from my house or whatever, and I actually think those were my daughter's bed sheets, and they happened to fit the mattress that we had available to
Okay.
us for the bed. So yeah, that was no foreshadowing there, just a matter of what we had.
Well, you got to read into. I'm like, maybe. Okay, you have a lot of a
For
few
sure.
locations. You have an office location, which I will say I'm minorly disappointed it wasn't used more. I understand why you didn't after watching the film, but I
Sure.
thought for sure we were going back to it at some point. So where did that
We
come from?
so originally we were going to go back to that.
Okay.
Not inside but outside. The original ending, not to spoil too much, but Alice, we'll just say she has a reason to go back to work after everything that has happened to her, and kind of creep on Jack a little bit as he's exiting the building. So we were going to go back there. The location itself was really nice. It's in a place called McKnight Road, out towards Pittsburgh, a little bit closer to the city. And we had our cast member David Dietz, who played Calvin, knew the gentleman that owned that space, and he after we had lost, we had a couple of other office locations set up that just because we were kind of still at the tail end of the pandemic, so we were losing locations because they were being shut down and we didn't have access to them, whatever. So that was the office that we ended up using, and I kind of liked it because it doesn't look like your typical, you know, cube farm office
No.
drone location. It had a little bit more character to it, which I liked. I had kind of pictured Alice working for a small company as a copywriter, and I think that you know, the space we had there works pretty well.
The bar location, I quite like that. Again, I find you make me very confined on your sets. They could be much bigger sets than they are, but no, I am stuck there. You're really making me. I think it allows your viewer to listen to the dialogue more because I'm not really expansive. So
Sure.
in the bar location, same thing. I know you've opened me up a bit more by this, but I really found I was still stuck here and there was something important going on.
Yeah, it was the location that we used there was called the Fallout Shelter for the bar scenes. And it's actually just downstairs from the restaurant scene that we did outside with all the, you know, the lights and stuff
Oh, okay.
that Alice gets to. It was the same building And the entire building is actually a bowling alley, which you would not know without seeing it. But yeah, it was they have a little club downstairs that they do concerts like every Friday night. So it is. It's a very intimate location. I loved the background. I loved like the faux boxes and things that were set up there and the instruments on stage. So yeah, I thought it worked really well, and it let us have a smaller crowd and fewer extras on set, but still make it look like it was packed. So that was also part of our, you know, thought process for choosing a location like that.
Well, you know where I'm going for the last one I want to discuss. I'm sure you know. Where did you get access to this place? Because, I mean, it looks very expensive, but I mean, I'm sure it isn't, but you make it look expensive.
For the haunted attraction,
you know where I was going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was that we were there for like, God, 2 weeks, and we had to go back and get some pickups there, too. So Freddy's is a real haunted attraction in my neck of the woods.
Okay.
All that stuff that Calvin says about, oh, this is great, and we all went here when we were kids, like that's all true. I've been going to Freddy's for 30 years. I'm 45, so I've been doing that since I was a teenager. Every year they update, they change things around, and we happen to catch them at a time where they had a lot of open space for us to work with. So we chose some of the more popular locations within the things that, you know, when we would go through as kids, there was always the coffin room, and there was always like the prison cell with the guy in it and the electric chair. So those were all parts of the attraction that a lot of people that grew up around here would know. And they also look, you know, visually cool, like the room with the two coffins in it that Alice doesn't want to get into for the photos. And so we chose, you know, some of the cooler spots inside the haunt. And obviously we spent a lot of time in the prison cell room, which was very convenient for us. And then the room that is the Hatter's lair, that was a big empty space that they just had available. And we built that. We designed the room and built it. My director of photography actually made those stained glass windows that you see in the background. So yeah, it's a real haunted attraction. It looks very different now. I mean, it's been a couple of years since we shot there, so they've updated it, and a lot of the spaces that we used are gone now. They've changed it, the layout around inside. But we actually did a little screening outside at Freddy's, basically where the final confrontation takes place. I set up one of those inflatable movie screens, and we did a little show for the people that worked at Freddy's that hadn't had a chance to see it yet. So that was kind of neat. It's a great spot.
Did that help you when you're doing the writing process to know you were, did you always know you're going to Freddy's? Maybe I should ask that first.
Yes. When I decided, or I should say when my wife convinced me to update the short film Waltz into a feature, cause she really liked the short film and was bummed that we never went anywhere with it. Whenever I decided, I was like, all right, well, where are we going to set this? Because originally the location for the short film, we didn't have access to that anymore. So I was talking to, again, Jason Proakis. He's the guy that runs Morgor Effects. He's also a good friend of mine. And I was saying, oh, you know, we want to update Waltz. And he goes, well, what about Freddy's? Cause it's, you know, we're getting into spring and summer. They're not open yet. They're not doing anything yet. Maybe we could get into there. And I was like, all right. So we took a drive out there. We met with Fred and Dave Brewer, his son. And they're the guys that own the place. They've owned it, you know. So, I mean, it's on their property. That whole haunt is, they own, I don't know how many acres it is back in Aliquippa, but they've got a really beautiful house sitting on it. And then way back behind there is where the haunted attraction is. So they took us back. He kind of gave us a tour. We walked through it. And I was like, yeah, I think we can make this work. So that did, I had begun writing at that point, but I wasn't to the part where Alice is abducted. So we kind of took a look at it, and that did factor in the different rooms and things. I kind of noted which rooms I wanted to feature, and as we were walking through, and that's kind of how it went.
Awesome. So having that in mind and doing the update, how long did we take to get from the update to the feature?
It took me about, I started writing, I want to say in March of that year, and we were shooting by, we were casting by, we were in June, I think we were casting. So I had a mostly completed script by June. So from March to June, about 3 months or so. And then I did some further updates to the script once we cast, because initially Alice was not British. But when I met Hannah, I was like, oh, we got to use that. The story at that point was that Alice lost her job and she just needed to find a new one, which is fine. I mean, you know, that would have worked okay. But adding the layer that, oh, she's got to, you know, not go back to England and not go back to, you know, her overbearing mother and all the terrible things that happened there. So the script got like another round of updates at that point, and I kind of incorporated her into the story in that way. And in my opinion, I think it worked a little bit better. You felt a little bit more worried for her having to go all the way back over there and not really knowing what she's doing here in America, like how to, you know, like Calvin says, can you even file for unemployment? You're on a work visa. And just little details like that I feel they're not big details. They're not like going to make or break the script, but they enhance things a little bit. They make it a little bit more believable. You know, the world feels a little more lived in.
Since you brought up the mom, I love the mom. She's probably my favorite character of the movie. We never hear the mom. You always hear Alice talking to her. Was there ever an idea to let us hear mom, or no, that was just the way it was going to be?
Nope. I felt like her presence was more felt without actually giving her a voice or a face or even a name or anything. It was just mom. You know, every time she would call, I felt like we didn't need to see or hear much more than that. And I'm not always a fan of, we actually cut a scene where it was a phone call between Alice and Calvin, and we had the back and forth and the cutting back. And it's not that those are bad. I just don't particularly find them all that interesting to see two sides of the same phone call. So yeah, we intentionally kind of left mom this nebulous entity that is just constantly hovering over Alice. And I think by, you know, denying her a physical presence, like you make her presence in the film a little bit more ever present, I guess, was my thinking at the time.
Okay. Since you weren't necessarily having Hannah in mind originally, where did you find her then?
Well, we do. Initially I went to, in Pittsburgh, one of the leading lady, for casting is Nancy Moser. She has a casting agency out here. I went to her initially to help me cast the film, and I was like, here's what we have. Here's our budget. You know, what can you do? And she said, honestly, the best thing that I can do for you is to tell you, just take the money you're going to give me and just pay your actors more and you'll find better people. And I said, okay. And she's right. I mean, that was excellent advice. I mean, she kind of gave up her chance at a, you know, a bit of a commission to, you know, help the project, you know, find its people a little better. And had I gone through Nancy, we might not have gotten the same caliber of people because we were offering less money. So, you know, it's hard to say, but, Hannah, we advertised on Facebook. There were a couple of groups. We have some local, groups here in Pittsburgh because the film industry is a big deal here. We have a lot of local filmmakers, and of course, you know, Hollywood comes through every so often and shoots something in our city. So, there's a lot of film folks here, and there's a lot of schools, Point Park, Carnegie Mellon University, a lot of really good acting programs here. So we do have a lot of talent locally. And, we just happened to catch Hannah as her husband was working here. He's a doctor and he was working at a hospital through the pandemic. So, you know, thankfully he made it through that. Okay. we just happened to catch her while she was here. And as I mentioned, you know, we had our Hatter actor, was a student at Point Park. So they were local as well. They saw and responded to the postings that we made. And, David Dietz is another, he would laugh if I used the word prolific, but he pops up in a lot of things in Pittsburgh. He's been in some movies with, we have an odd kind of population of former pro wrestlers for some reason, because Kurt Angle is from here, from the WWE. And they've done some horror movies out here. They did Pro Wrestlers Versus Zombies, and some other things out this way. So, so he was in a film with Kurt Angle, David was, and that's, I think, actually his audition reel that he sent me included a scene from that. And I was like, that's so cool. That I used to be a big fan of Kurt Angle. I worked with his cousin for a while. So yeah, he was, so yeah, they were all the right people, and they all happened to be in Pittsburgh at the right time to audition for the roles.
Okay. I find when you're always setting up your shots, I got to say you light very well. So I don't know if that's you or I owe somebody else a compliment. I sign sometimes with indies are not well lit and I have problems, but yours was, everything was nice and bright. And again, it allowed that pacing and dialogue to come through for me, because I wasn't focusing on something else. I was focusing on what I was supposed to be all the time. So is that a plan of yours?
That is, so my director of photography, Kevin Kukler, he's done probably 50 or 60 films in Pittsburgh. So he and I would sit down, we'd discuss the scene. This is what we want. This is the look that I want. And then Kevin would just go to work. And he has some very, he's been doing this for, I want to say, well over a decade at this point, probably 12, 13 years. His lighting kit is ridiculous. He has something for every occasion. He has, you know, your typical traditional film lights. He's got these little LED things that you can just kind of stick up. He's got battery powered. The dude has everything. And so, yeah, it was, here's what we're going for. And I gave him some leeway because lighting is, like you say, it's very, very important. And he is very gifted with kind of painting the background. You know what I mean? Like a lot of the lighting that you see in the film. Now some of that was done in post, especially for the Hatter's Layer. The Hatter's Layer, okay, when we lit it initially, it was kind of flat. And
that's what I thought. Okay.
Once again, credit to my editor, Holly. She did some real magic with that too. But yeah, Kevin has a real gift for, you know, kind of painting the scene and making it look beautiful so that when the time comes and you're in post and you're, you know, darkening it or trying to make it more atmospheric, that base level of lighting is exactly what it needs to be to kind of draw out these other looks and styles that we can kind of play with in post. So, it was really a combination and collaboration of Kevin and myself on the set, and then kind of myself and Holly in post saying, okay, what can we do with this? And, you know, trying to give it a really professional look. Cause I mean, I agree with you. I love watching indie horror, and during this Halloween season, I watched probably 30 different films on Tubi that I've never seen before. And many of them seemed like they probably had a budget like right around where ours was. And some of them were great and they looked great and they were really interesting. And some of them, it was like, oh, I would have probably lit this a little differently.
Yes.
This was just dark or flat. Yeah.
Sometimes it's a money issue. I get that, but show me what you want me to see as a viewer. Mm-hmm. I always say, like, allow me to enjoy what you're trying to perform. If I don't understand it or can't see it, it's going to be hard for me to follow.
Yeah.
So I want to go to music. I love the music too. The music's lovely in this film. Constant change.
Yeah, we did. And again, this was just the luck of the draw. We had a gentleman reach out to me through the website. He goes by the name Gory Rory. And he said, hey, I'm working, you know, I'm a composer and I'd be interested in scoring your film. It sounds really cool. I sent him the screenplay and I told him what I wanted to do with it. And he sent me back some samples that were really amazing. I'm not by any stretch of the imagination am I a musician. I love music. Like it gets in my head. It does things. It kind of is responsible for my writing a lot of times. But to explain it on a technical level, can't do it. But I told him, I said I would love to have a theme for Alice, a theme for the Hatter, and some way to kind of make them dance around each other. And so he scored it. A lot of the score, a lot of the main themes, like Alice's theme, it's scored as a waltz. It's scored in 3/3 time. And there's some interchange You can't always hear it, like, unless you have headphones on or if you're in like a theater. When we did our premiere, we had in our theater, like, the sound, it was just really well done, but you could really hear the layers of the music a little bit better in those cases. And yeah, he did some really cool stuff with Alice and the Hatter's themes. And I mean, I had chills during the one torture scene where the carving is happening, and the song that plays, like the little choir that comes in and everything. I mean, I am blown away by what he was able to put together for this. And it was pretty much just him with the score, like the actual score. I think it was him, and he had one collaborator who helped with the strings. And then he had a couple of different folks that he worked on for the actual vocal songs. There were five. There were six in total, but he did five of the vocal songs, like the songs at the bar that you hear playing, and the little pantomimes, the montage scenes that take place. That's all Rory and his partners. My favorite of which has to be the end credit song. It's called Poor Alice.
It is.
I told him, I said, if I could afford it, I would get Melanie Martinez's Mad Hatter to play over the ending credits of this. I said, but I can't. So can you make a song that sounds like that and that, you know, plays with the Alice in Wonderland? He's like, oh yeah. And so him and I want to say it was Molly Oblivion and Mad Hat Cat, I think, was the folks that he collaborated on for that song. Oh, I just love it. I love the lyrics. I love the layers. I listen to that song often, actually, which probably sounds vain. I'm like, oh, it's my song for my movie, but oh my God, it's so good.
It's a good song. No, please. I've given it to you. Okay. Some easy questions for you coming up.
Okay.
I presume Alice's costume's an Amazon order.
Yeah. The actual Alice in Wonderland outfit. Yeah, that was
correct.
That was Amazon or was it eBay? I think it was Amazon. I think the Hatters came off of eBay. But yeah, Alice's was from...
I want to get into the Hatters because that mask looks like a little more complicated creation. Mm-hmm. Or maybe... did you play with the mask or it came directly like that?
We had... No, that was made custom. That was done by Morgor Effects.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a scene where in the background, when Alice is tied up... where you see another mask that had kind of like a monocle in it. And that was also that was going to be the Hatter's mask initially. We wound up, the mouth was kind of funny and we couldn't get it to work right. So we went with the second one, but we still included it in the film because I thought it was really cool and creepy looking. So we kind of put it in the background, but yeah, custom.
Okay. Next question. I want to discuss the talking of the Hatter. Is that ADR afterwards or not? Because to me, I thought it was ADR afterwards.
Well, it probably should have been. And I think that we're actually going to go back and re-record some of those lines because the first torture scene, especially, it's a little muffled at times. I'm getting it's hard at. To That's hear what he's saying.
I thought you changed it at one point. You went in and so changed it already.
So no, not yet. But what we did do was we just had the actor just had the mask on. We had a lav mic kind of up underneath it to catch the lines. And then we had the boom mic, of course. But the line, some of those lines were spoken so softly and it sounded great on set, of course. But after the fact, when we're trying to get in and like boost it a little bit, it got a little muffled. So we're going to have the Hatter's actor re-record some of those before we get into too many more film festivals. We're going to, try to rework that a little bit, but it was a post-production voice modulation basically. So we let the Hatter do their thing and, perform their heart out and however they wanted to do it. And then after that, we went back, Holly Grayson is my editor for this. She kind of went in and found a modulation that worked, tons and tons and tons of post-processing to really get it to click and to sound good. But that was what we were going for. I mean, for obvious reasons that having seen the film, we needed to make the voice sound a certain way so that,
yes. Oh yeah, for sure.
You don't want to give away who it is. I mean, it's not the best kept secret. There are certainly hints as to who it is.
100%.
But, Yeah, but we wanted to try and keep it, you know, keep the illusion for as long as possible. So yeah, she did really good work on that. We're just gonna kind of touch it up in a few spots and
Okay, there is a playing card involved in one scene, as you know what scene I'm talking about, so I won't ruin anything.
sure.
What card is it? I tried to stop it, look for it. Was there, is there different cards, or is it always the same card?
So no, well, we bought and this was from the original, the short film version of Waltz. That gag with the cards was in that one too. And it's just it's a deck of Alice in Wonderland playing cards.
Okay.
And so the first one that comes out, I want to say it was like a portrait of the Queen of Hearts.
Okay, I
And
tried to
then
figure
it
it
had
out, and
the
I know you're doing a far shot, so it's hard for me to focus in on that
Right.
card.
Yeah, it was and then we actually had the, you know, the tweets that Alice made. We actually handwrote those on there with markers. So
Okay, interesting. Okay.
yeah.
While you're doing an indie, I find sometimes your actors and yourself, not so much the director, but the people, have limited time because obviously you're telling me your main actor was only here for so long. So how long did it take you to shoot this?
We had total shoot days. I think we were up around 19 or 20, maybe 21 with some of the reshoots. Most of that was spent at Freddy's. We
I was
had
thinking
3 days.
that.
We were there for a while, and we had to go back. We couldn't get the darn bonfire at the end to really like light and catch. So,
Really?
We had to go back and do that again. Now keep in mind, we were shooting at like 4 a.m. So it was
Of
very,
course.
you know, it was wet. There's a lot of moisture in the air, a lot of dew and stuff on everything. So, we ended up using this crazy concoction of like kerosene and gasoline to finally really get it, you know, looking like it does. But yeah, and we'd shot 3 days in Alice's house, which was actually the house of a friend of mine. We were there for 3 days, and then everything else, it was just we were just there for one day. We did the bar and the restaurant scenes in one day. Probably
Wow.
about yeah, it was a long day, but yeah, we did because we had two bar scenes, so we had two different setups down there, and then we had the outdoor restaurant scene. So we were there for probably 14 hours, maybe.
Ooh.
So yeah, I think our longest day was the last day at Alice's house. We were there from, I want to say, like 10 a.m. until about 5 a.m. the next morning. So that was the longest day for sure.
My favorite question, because it's a horror film, I always like to ask, working with blood, because everybody has a different experience and different concoction. So tell me a little bit about that, please.
So all of our blood and viscera was made by Morgore Effects and Jason Proakis. He has experimented off and on over the years with different concoctions to make it look thick and real and whatever. And obviously there are buckets of it towards the end. And we left quite a mess in Freddy's. It took us probably about 2 days to clean everything up from
I
that
was thinking you
space.
might have.
But yeah, it was fine. I without spoiling too much, there was one particular cast member who probably had more of it on them than anybody else,
I would agree with that.
so that was not a pleasant experience for that particular actor. But you know, on the other side of it was like, wow, that was kind of cool that, you know, I got to do all that. But obviously we had, so there were some specific gags that we did towards the end that, again, involving the same person who, you know, it was one of those things where if we didn't quite get it right, we were kind of hosed. Like there was a lot of pressure to make sure that, okay, we've got to get this right on this take, because if we don't, the room is going to be a mess and we can't shut down to clean it up. Like we really got to make sure that we get this right. And amazingly we did. We managed to get a lot of that on the very, very first take. So Alice's it's you see it in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler per se, but when the Hatter carves the word into Alice's chest, the tighter shots that we did for that, obviously that was another thing where it was like, we really need to get this right the first time, because more appliances means more money. And I mean, it's, we didn't have a lot of that to go around. So, we did. And most of what you see there is actually just two or three cuts that we just kept going back to and like reversing it and flipping it and doing different things to make it seem like she's carving the whole word. It was really only just a handful of cuts that were actually made into the appliance on Alice's chest.
Okay, you made it through. Now it's time for fun questions, which you were prepared for.
Because you've listened to interviews.
You know your first question, so what's your favorite film?
Halloween, John Carpenter, 1978.
Favorite on-set meal?
I always carry with me. I typically eat low carb because I'm diabetic, so I try to have like low carb snacks. And I always have those like cheese and beef stick things, like from Slim Jim. I keep those on me at all times. That way, I can just tuck in if I need to. As a result, I don't often actually eat meals, but I do keep that snack with me at all times.
That counts. One film you've always recommended to people that they don't always seem to know exists.
The Autopsy of Jane Doe. That is
excellent. That is,
love that movie.
That is an excellent choice. I don't know a lot I have seen it, but a lot of people have not. And I was shocked at one point that one of the cast members was real, and I did not think they were.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. If you've seen the film, you know where I'm going. And somebody told me that. We were discussing it on one of our horror podcasts. And I was shocked. I saw for sure that was not real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was that movie blew me away the first time I saw it. I absolutely love it.
So before I let you go, tell me where they can find your... Well, your film's on the Film Festival circuit, but you must have other things for people to watch.
Yeah, I do. I'm on Vimeo, and actually probably the easiest way to find us is on Facebook. We're at Official GS Productions on Facebook. That's Grim Sleeper Productions, my company. We have links to, I do have some other stuff to watch. We have some clips from our, the current project we're working on, a zombie film called Dead Friends Forever. We have some Romero zombies in that, which is super cool. And, I do have a short film called 415, which is fully available online. It's won some awards. It's spent years. We finished it in like 2018, and I just pulled it off the festival circuit like last year. So it's been around the block for quite a few years. Psychological thriller. It's a slow burn. It's about 15 minutes long. Deeply personal film, that one is. So, Official GS Productions at Facebook, and you can check out that and Waltz updates and everything else from there.
Thank you for your time. Have a great day.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.